Chapter 11. Rosmarin. After we packed up the camp, the first signs of day turned the forest a light gray color. After the assault on our camp by the wood nymphs, we were all in varying states of alertness. Erwin, our fearless leader at the head of our group, pulled out her map every so often to track where we were. Sometimes she made us stop, and those of us with wings would fly up above the canopy to scout the land and see how far we had come. I tried to let Erwin handle that business the most, not wanting Chris to feel jealous, but a couple of times, Onyx, Eri, and I took Rachel, Sahar, and Chris above the treetops for a change of scenery, and for a little break from the oppressive atmosphere of the forest. Rachel, still grumpy about the wood nymphs, did a good job of keeping an eye out for any other creatures that might want to ambush us. A couple of times she stopped our party using her vampiric senses to listen for strange sounds. On one such occasion, she halted us and then rode off into the forest like a crazy woman. When she appeared, she simply said, "Nymphs." And that was all we needed to know. Onyx, a trained warrior, always sat at the ready, even if the rest of us let our guard down. She was her usual stoic self, but I could tell she was enjoying our expedition, happy to be out in land she had never seen before. Most gargoyles' lives consisted of training and war, so the only time they leave the castle is if they go off to fight some faraway battle. The Doombringer had fought many battles over the years, and we had traveled some interesting places together. But I figured this might have been the first time she had been outside of Constanta without there being a war at hand. Once we reached Nahuatl, however, that could easily change. Sahar continued her meditations, my sorceress friend in pure ecstasy among the ancient magic of Carwyn Forest. I know she had traveled to many lands in her long lifetime, and she had probably been in this same forest before. But for the past few years, she had holed up in her lab, working to the bone to find some kind of cure for the zombies. This had to be heaven for her. While the rest of us rode through the trees fairly carefree, Sahar was silently working her magic, sending illusory tendrils out all around us to keep watch. Kristoff tried meditating again, but I could sense his jumpiness. Several times I saw his head jerk to look at something in the trees. I smiled at him, my handsome Kristoff. I was so proud of this man and how far he had come in just the past few months. I thought about my years of ruling Constanta and all the mistakes I'd made. Kristoff had only been king a few months and a council member only a few months before that, and he had already shaped Constanta into a better kingdom. Some people were simply born to lead, and Kristoff, Lightbearer, was such a person. My thoughts carried me back through the forest, over the grasslands, back to Constanta and the West Village where Kristoff's family were probably worried sick about us. I saw myself standing in that old, shabby house that looked like it might fall apart at any minute. I remembered the day I had paid them a visit to offer Kristoff my deal. His mother, Tanya, had said something to me, something that stood out. I could see her now, standing with her two youngest children with tears streaming down her careworn face. "I knew when I first held that boy in my arms all those years ago that he wouldn't be mine forever. I've always felt we were only meant to care for him for a short while. He's been caring for us, and I feel his fate is here now." I pondered her words and all the mysteries surrounding Kristoff. He was the only one of his family that possessed these strange powers, and I always thought he looked different from the rest of them. To be fair, though, I had no idea what his father looked like since he had died the previous year, and I never had the chance to meet him. That made me wonder about Kristoff's early life. While he divulged some of his early experiences to me, he never delved too deeply into it, and I didn't want to pry too much. After all, I partly felt guilty for his poor quality of life. My failures as queen would also rack me with guilt when it came to the West Village, But I knew Christoph and many of the Westsiders did not hold my mistakes against me. Constanta was full of wonderful and gracious people, just like Chris. Still, that left me with many questions about Christoph and his family that I never quite knew how to bring up. After mulling over Tanya's words, I came to suspect that Christoph was not her real child. Whether he knew that about himself or not, I couldn't say, and I wasn't sure when the right time would be to ask him. Maybe I could prod and see what clues came out of him, and this could be the perfect time to do that. I coaxed my horse forward so that I was level with Christoph on his red-coated stallion. His eyes were closed, and a wrinkle creased his dark brows. He seemed deep into his meditations, and so I decided not to disturb him right then. However, before I could look away, his eyes slid open, and I stared into those hazel orbs. "Hello, my sweet," he crooned at me. His features softened as he registered my face, and a large smile dawned across his lips. His body's normal glow brightened. "How is your meditation going?" I asked, not wanting to jump into my line of questioning too fast. Christoph stretched his arms into the air and yawned. "Pretty good, I think. Actually, I don't really know if I'm accomplishing anything, but it feels nice."
"I'm sure you're doing just fine, my love." I beamed at my mate. We rode next to each other in silence for a moment as I decided what to say next.
"I've been thinking. What do you know about your early years? When you were a baby, I mean." He gave me a sideways glance, caught off guard by my questions. My heart fluttered up into my throat, and I hoped I hadn't offended him or touched on a sore subject. His face scrunched up, a sure sign of the thoughts ricocheting through his head.
Well, I guess I don't really know much."
"Did your parents ever tell you anything?" I questioned. Christoph scratched his head, one of those cute little quirks he did that drove me crazy with love for him.
"I guess, now that you mention it, my mother always used to say weird things to my father. I think she thought I wasn't paying attention, but I always eavesdropped on their conversations."
He laughed, recalling some memory of his parents. I let the memory play through his mind and then continued. "What sorts of things did she say?"
"Oh, just stuff like, 'I can't believe this boy is really ours.' Or sometimes she'd get all sad and say, 'I wonder how much longer we'll have him.' I just thought those were things all parents said about their kids, but she didn't talk that way about Tyrion and Thea."
It may not have been definitive proof, but it was enough information for me to believe my suspicions were true. With that answered for me, I didn't want to pry any more into Christoph's memories and possibly upset him. Hell, I had probably already turned his world upside down from just those few questions, so I didn't say anything else and let him sit with his thoughts. It was another warm day, even though the sun's light still struggled to reach us through the dense forest. I silently cursed my long sleeves and light armor, but I knew that if I removed any articles of clothing, Christoph would whine, and I wanted him as protected as possible. The rest of the day passed without any problems, and after hours of riding and only stopping a few short times, we made camp. Christoph managed to use his power to light another fire, and Sahar, with waves of her hands, had the camp looking like a cozy room with blankets and silks strewn about. We were all a little on edge, especially Chris and Rachel, both worried that the wood nymphs might return for revenge, so Sahar spent some time placing protective spells around the camp.
"Why didn't you do that last night?"
Chris snapped. "I didn't think the nymphs would bother us," Sahar retorted, echoing my earlier comments that they would leave us alone. Sure, Rachel did not like the creatures. She had little patience for any small thing she perceived to be annoying.
But Erwin and I had passed through forests like this before, ones protected by the nymphs. I had heard stories of travelers being attacked before, but usually they were doing something the nymphs counted as harmful to the forest. My companions and I had been traveling quietly, and we were more than considerate to the inhabitants of this old forest. Maybe something has them on edge, I offered.
Or maybe they just don't like Rachel,
Christoph added as he gave Rachel a teasing grin. Either way, let's be on guard. There may be something else in this forest with us. I didn't want to frighten my companions, but it was the only explanation I had for the nymph's strange behavior. After another meal of stew and blood for Rachel and me, we said our goodnights, and I fell into a deep sleep in the arms of Christoph. The next morning, I was the first to wake. I poured myself another cup of blood and sipped on it thoughtfully as I listened to the constant music of the forest and the soft snores of my friends. As much as I missed Constanta and constantly wondered how their temporary council was faring, I realized that being out in the wild was doing me some good. I had also managed to fall into some meditations as we rode along, letting the magic infiltrate me and heal some of my anxieties. I thanked the gods for this time of learning and growth, something I probably hadn't done enough of back home. This journey proved to be a nice break in my daily routine as queen, and it was a new chance to learn more about myself and my friends. I heard a soft rustling and looked up to see Rachel walking towards me.
You're up early,
she yawned.
How'd you sleep?
I handed her a cup of blood. Surprisingly well. There's something quite calming about being out in the wilds.
Yeah, as long as we aren't being attacked by wood nymphs.
I laughed at my goth friend. Always so serious, but a good counter to my more optimistic nature. We balanced each other out. My weaknesses were her strengths. Onyx was the next to wake up. She stood up and stretched, letting her long wings extend out behind her. A mighty yawn rolled out of her gaping mouth, sounding more like a growl.
What the devil was that?
Chris jumped up to his feet.
A bit jumpy, king,
teased Rachel.
Sorry, I yawned,
answered Onyx.
We all shared a hearty laugh, as we usually did at Kristoff's expense, and once Sahar and Erwin were awake, we packed up the camp and set out.
This would hopefully be our last day in the Carwyn Forest, and we were all eager to see what lay on the other side. Erwin had us pick up the pace, hoping to reach the edge of the forest by nightfall so we could sleep in the village, instead of having to make camp another night. Rather than stopping for meals, we ate atop our horses and did our best to push through the exhaustion of riding all day. I rode at the tail of the party, next to Sahar, letting her murmurings and humming lull me into a comfy state of mind. I watched my friends ahead of us. Christoph and Rachel rode next to each other, and I thought they were getting along well. They laughed and joked and teased each other. Rachel punched Chris in the shoulder, and he grabbed a handful of leaves from a nearby tree and shoved them in her face.
Those two are like children,
came Sahar's purring voice. She shook her head at our two playful companions, but she wore a loving smile. I'm glad they're getting along so well. Maybe they'll get along as well as you do with him. I winked at Sahar and let out a laugh and patted my mysterious friend on the shoulder.
The boy is truly something else,
she offered. I nodded, letting my heart fill up with love for him, for Rachel and Sahar, and Onyx, and Erwin. Whatever Nawotl had waiting for us, I knew we would meet those obstacles head-on, and there was no doubt in me that we would triumph. It seemed to be in our nature. The rest of the day came and went, the familiar dark bleeding through the trees and descending upon us like a veil. Erwin wanted to push on, saying the forest's edge shouldn't be too far. We rode on through the dark, Kristoff's skin softly glowing as if the moon were illuminating his tan skin. After an hour or so, the forest began opening up, appearing much like it did on the north side with the large trees spaced out. I started to feel the cool breeze on me, something I hadn't felt the past 2 days in the dense wood, and I breathed in the cool air, letting it refresh me. But a familiar sound echoed through the night. Alarm bells. The council glanced at each other, and without a second thought, we raced through the last leg of the woods. We broke out into the open and saw Treble Village perched on the edge of the forest. The tiny town was alive with people carrying torches, running and shouting. What was happening? I scanned the surrounding field, drawing a line with my eyes from the village out into the dark. And then I saw them. Zombies.